This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonslow, and if you're not with me, then you are my enemy. That and more after a word from our sponsors. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? Picoscope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. All right, well, I'd like to welcome back the podcast our number one requested guest, Margaret Light, a licensed marriage and family therapist and also the president of Equilibrium Therapy Services here in Minnesota. And you cover Wisconsin, and you've thus expanded beyond the double state area.
I mean, Minnesota and Wisconsin, whatever we call that. Yes.
I didn't know if you made it up to Canada or Iowa. They need a lot of help down there. There's this guy.
There's a guy. There's always a guy.
He's a friend. Well, he was. Now maybe he's not anymore, but we were friends.
Until you told him he needed therapy.
Well, he's just finding out now if he's listening.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Of course. I'm happy you still come on, even though you put up with so much of my stuff.
It's okay. We're working on it. We're trying a new thing where I exert less effort, so everyone might be really disappointed.
Take a page out of my book.
Right. Yeah. If you can't beat them, you join them. And so we're going to try that today.
It's working like gangbusters. But yeah, Minnesota the last couple months has had some excitement, if you will, with some federal agencies. What really drove me to be really want to sit down with you and talk about this is that there's no way we can put the politics part aside, but without necessarily choosing one side or the other, which in my mind right away is kind of sickening, one side or the other. I was just kind of blown away by how differently people and right or wrong, good or bad, view and process the same event almost 180 degrees differently. I'm not scared to talk about anything in depth or my thoughts on it. I guess that's not what I'm trying to avoid. How somebody saw that was usually closely related to their ideologies, specifically political ideologies. It blows my mind. And then a couple of the conversations I would get involved with, and I'm probably guilty of being somewhat generalized and overgeneralized in as a whole. And I don't want to say overgeneralized as in general. I feel like I try to take into account a lot and as much as I can, and things get fuzzy then. And I don't mean fuzzy so much out of focus, but it starts getting homogenized to me. And making certain comments or posting responses to people, regardless of their political leanings or how they viewed that video, viewed my responses as against them, even though I would argue many of the times I was agreeing with them. It's disheartening, it's disappointing, it's frustrating, and it's stuff we see day in and day out before all this happened, but it just got really ramped up after these events with ICE and really the Border Patrol, so CBP. That's where we really started to see a lot of this bubble up again. Minnesota's had a few of these events in the past too, as well as the country in general. In a way, nothing new, but I just felt like it's a good reason to sit down with you again. It's another tragedy. So then we get to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah, that's usually when people seek therapists out, right? I mean, people don't come find us when they're happy, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, as an article I read said, Minnesota has sort of become the center of the universe here this winter, or the center of everything. And I think, like, you're hardly alone. We are not alone in kind of sitting in this place of really observing how reactive people have become to one another, right? So not even just to the situations and to the violence that we've watched happen here, but to each other, right? And that's more than just strangers on the internet. That's family members, that's friends, that's loved ones, that's people cutting each other off, that's, right, like major disagreements, that's people ending marriages. And so it's this really complicated topic. And sometimes it's useful to differentiate, are we talking about policies? Are we talking about how people are talking about this? Are we talking about fundamental values? It's a tricky space of, yes, right, two people watch the same video and have very different reactions. And why is that? This is a thing as a therapist, right? Like, people have been bringing to me this entire time, right? I've had this some version of this conversation a million times now. And it is my role to tell people what to think, right? It isn't my role to try and tell people how to vote or what policies to support. But what I can do is help people really look at, how am I thinking of this and about this? And does my thinking make sense? And then what is the impact of that? And so I think that's an interesting space to sort of occupy of, if we can pause or sort of hold, right? We don't have to forget everything, but if we can hold the policies for a minute and focus on how we're thinking, I wonder if it's possible for us to get a little traction there, looking at kind of those underlying processes. And so I guess that's sort of my default when folks bring this up to me. And to some degree, I think that actually works really well socially, right? I was thinking about today, there's been a lot of discussion about how people communicate, right? There's, for years now, we've really been talking about this with our political leaders of, what do they say and is that acceptable? And there's a lot of debate about good or bad, right or wrong. The question I haven't heard asked, and I'm sure somebody somewhere has asked it, but if your spouse spoke to you the way some of our political leaders are speaking to their constituents or to our citizens or even to people who aren't citizens, like, would you be okay with that? Like, is that a marriage you want to be in? And I think a lot of us, I like to think, could probably come back with, nope, this doesn't look like very much fun.
Yeah, relationships, be it like intimate or like you said, a spouse or a significant other, a friend, a coworker. And that's how I view a lot of our leaders, is they are kind of coworkers and they don't have to necessarily agree on how to get something done or the philosophy behind it. But fundamentally, you would think there's a genuine baseline respect that you both are trying, you know, or groups or both individuals, however you want to see it, are there operating in the best interest that they can or think for their given district or region, something like that. This will probably be interpreted as how my political leanings are. Although I think I've been pretty open that I think I go one way or the other, depending on the specific topic or subject. I saw a clip, and I get a lot of clips, right? And they're just kind of always running, and I like to think about them. But it was Barack Obama. Was he president at the time? He might have been former. I think he's still president, actually. John McCain had passed away. Senator John McCain had passed away. And they would talk, right? They would exchange barbs. There's a certain level of respect that each had. I think partly as a joke, like fun and ribbing a little bit, but Senator McCain requested that Barack maybe President Obama at the time, please speak at his funeral. The kind of the gig was you have to stand up in front of a lot of people and say some nice things about me. Ha ha ha. But it wasn't hard for him to do because even though they disagreed on a lot of things, there was a certain level of respect for one another. That seems to be like fading fast, and not just at the leadership level or the elected official level. It's trickling down to just everybody. Like even our local kind of conversations on social media where it works out really well. Somebody loses something. They can say, hey, I was whatever store and I lost my wallet or keys or something like that. Or somebody can say, hey, look, I found this, or hey, pay attention to over here. So-and-so may need help, something like that. But then it goes political, or it doesn't have to be necessarily political. It can be a lot of things. But next thing you know, it's a lot of animosity. You know, I disagree with you. I disagree with the angle you're taking, but I appreciate that you are trying to act in the best interest of your family, your block, your yard, your city, your state. It just seems to be fading, and it's very frustrating and sad.
Well, it is. And I think about, like, if a couple comes to see me for therapy, the first thing I assess isn't what are they fighting about, it's how are they fighting. Because if you're fighting about the kids, but what your fights are is screaming at each other and calling each other names and degrading and blaming and threatening to harm the other person, like, I don't care what the issue is with the kids. We're not addressing that until these two people can fight productively and where there's some shared ground rules. I mean, that sounds like what you're commenting on of, it's like our shared ground rules don't exist anymore. And when ground rules disappear, it gets really hard to give each other the benefit of the doubt, right? It gets hard to kind of hang in there, like with each other, and be like, okay, this is how I'm interpreting that. Is that what you're trying to say to me? Because I'm hearing this and like, I'm having a reaction to it. This is just my perception of it. It almost feels to me like there's been this sort of like romanticization or idealization of language that's cruel. A thing I do a lot with folks professionally is there's a question of, okay, so what do you hope will happen when you say that? And anytime someone gives me, well, I don't know, or nothing, my automatic thought, I don't always say it, but the automatic thought is, okay, so then why are you saying it? What is the goal of this? If you don't know the goal, or if your goal is to hurt someone or to get a reaction or to force them to change or something, right? Like it gets into this territory where we're really violating interpersonal boundaries. And now the argument people can kind of give back to that is, well, right, the political is personal, is sort of the saying, right? It has real effects on people's lives, which it does. That's true, right? No one's debating that, or at least I'm not in this context, right? Like, and if we accept that it's true, it is still useful to be effective in how we talk about it. And so there's been this reactivity and this drive to just attack one another, and then this level of reactivity, and it's not effective. And so we've seen that play out around these deaths, and we can watch or read or whatever you're doing, blaming, shaming, justifying, rationalizing, all or nothing thinking, all the shoulds, right? Like, it's like the therapist's laundry list of cognitive distortions that I hand out to people. Like, I literally have a printout and I can check off every box here.
I think there's a lot of the cognitive categorizations, I guess, or I don't want to say afflictions. Well, you have cognitive distortion, you have cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance is a cognitive distortion. Cognitive distortions is your umbrella term.
Okay. You were saying that, it just makes me think, and probably why I get categorized as being overgeneralizing or obtuse with some of my statements or comments, but it's hard for me not to see the hypocrisy of, on one hand, you will use harsh language, condescension, shaming, heavy shaming, name calling, whatever, to get a reaction out of somebody. And then you get the reaction and then switch the roles of now justifying what you're doing, thinking, saying. This would be from the same person who's arguing that, and again, I guess I'm not trying to lead this too much, but the reality is that one of the border patrolmen put themselves in front of the vehicle, which as far as I know, under all protocols, is a no-no. And it's a shared understanding that as a enforcement agent, officer, whatever, if you put yourself into danger, you now cannot take that danger and use it as a justifiable reason to use whatever force. In this case, deadly. That's not how it's supposed to work. And so to me, I see this as a being hypocrisy. You just, not nearly as severe, but the same strategy was used. You freely used it on this person to evoke a reaction to therefore justify your next reactions. However, you would shun that strategy in this instance. Now, I understand one is words and one is bullets. I get that. But to me, it's still the same strategy. And now it's not that you're against the strategy, you're just against how severe the result was. And I feel like that breaks your position. I feel like that undermines everything. And I find that to be a distortion. And maybe it's my distortion, and I feel like I'm open to having that pointed out because I want to know it so I can address it in my own head. But that's the kind of stuff we're seeing, is the rules that you're okay playing by depend heavily on who's playing the game or which game we're playing. And
so part of, I think, what we're looking at there is, yes, justification and rationalization, right? I'm allowed to do this to you because X, Y, Z. Never mind if the thing I'm doing in the first place has integrity or displays basic respect or, right, all of these things. So that is distorted thinking. But there's also this thing that happens of like deflection. I think to think about sometimes is, it's not that we all have to be perfect. I mean, especially when we're exposed to, I mean, like in this case, people dying, we expect people to have an emotional reaction to that. It's not that we're going to respond perfectly all the time. It's, do we double down on the parts of it that we did wrong? Like, do I now justify my name calling because I was upset? Or do I say, you know what, you're right, I don't want to behave that way, so it was wrong for me to call you a name, and, right, like I can own that, and it doesn't change the fact that I still have a major problem with what I just watched. And that is still a valid point and still a thing we need to discuss, like as a group. What we see sometimes is people will say, well, I don't have to listen to you because you said that badly. You cannot like how someone says it. They can even have been blatantly disrespectful. And it's okay to say, hey, I'm not okay with that. And I expect accountability for that. And we still need to get back to the issue. And so it's this balance of, can we hold both? Instead of this black or white, only one gets to be true, can we hold both? And so to your point, like in this video, the first shooting, we can hold the idea of, sure, this officer could have felt afraid. Like that could have been true. I'm not in his head. And I can hold this equally true, I don't want people to die who don't actually need to. Both get to be true. And if we can operate from that perspective, I think then we have the opportunity to talk about, so what does that mean? What are our expectations for law enforcement? What is our expectations for our leaders? What do we want to see in our community? Right, a really basic empathy exercise is, if that was my child in either one of those roles, how would I feel? And it gets really messy really quickly when we start doing that. And so if we acknowledge that, can we talk about it differently?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially like just the being able to hold more than one thought at once or one or more truths at once. And I know true can be, we can play with that word a little bit, but in general, in the spirit of the conversation, I think we can hold multiple truths to be acceptable. Like, should she have followed the orders? Yep. Did she? No.
And I think for truths, I mean, I actually think we can play with that a little bit, because sometimes what we're talking about with truths is individual perspectives and experiences. I'm not in a place to say so-and-so shouldn't have felt afraid. Like, that's not mine to decide, right? Like, I don't get to dictate someone else's feelings. Like, I watched the video as a woman. If I had men coming at me, screaming at me to get out of the car, I'm going to be honest, my first instinct as a woman is not to listen to that. That looks like a really bad scenario for me to like expose myself to. Like, I'm not doing it. And so good, bad, or other, right or wrong, can we hold both? That different people are going to have different reactions for different reasons based on different histories, based on different threat perceptions, based on power. Like, there's a million things to contextualize this. And even should is a cognitive distortion, because we're passing a judgment on someone else.
I was going to kind of say that.
Well, it is. And should is different than standards of conduct, right? Like, as professionals, people have standards of conduct and rules we uphold and ethics and laws and all that stuff. But should is an interpersonal thing, right? That's a judgment. That's personal belief. I don't get to decide that for someone else. The piece that's been interesting is, I think some of the discussion about professional conduct or expectations gets lost in all of the back and forth and argument and entrenchment and defensiveness. And we don't even seem to have that discussion.
Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADAS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new tech-only community to help you find better independent shops, fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city. Shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. A lot of times I talk about systems, environments, and stuff like that. People that I would say know me and converse with me often already know that that's a piece of my thought, not the entire thought. That, again, can we hold multiple thoughts at once or multiple truths at once? That one, there is a clear system flaw. There's a flaw in protocol or training or whatever, that the system is not functioning the way it needs to work. That I'm not saying that then immediately excuses individuals from making individual decisions. Sometimes it gets exhausting having to just try to help people give you the latitude to have layers to your thoughts or positions. Like, okay, just because I said that doesn't omit this, but these both can be true. And if one isn't fixed, like, you can remove the individual, deal with them. However, the system will virtually guarantee a similar situation will arise.
If we think about having these discussions online or with friends or with family or with whoever, there is a level of skill in being able to even agree or be explicit about, like, what are we talking about and why? Because different brains go different places, right? I just had this discussion with someone the other day of, like, my brain goes so broad that I think it can feel really overwhelming for folks. And so even being able to know our own tendencies, right? So if someone wants to talk about this, okay, like, so what is the goal of that discussion? Are we wanting to talk about this specific incident? Are we wanting to talk about the systemic and, like, contextual factors here? Are we wanting to talk about our emotional reactions to it? Am I wanting support around this? Am I afraid? Like, what is the goal of this discussion? Because I do think there's a thing that happens where a topic gets brought up, but nobody clarifies why. And so we can be having two or three or four very different conversations where then the responses don't make sense to us, or they feel misattuned or off in some way because no one has said, wait.
I'm sure many of the listeners are wondering, how the heck does this relate to the shop? Or I think it absolutely relates to us as individuals, right? It's how we operate, starting with confirmation bias all the way through just cognitive distortion. That understanding, even conceptually, the mechanics of these things help you interact at work, where you also have similar situations of seeing the same exact thing differently. I'm not talking about, like, waveforms and scan data. I'm talking about situations and perspectives. Like, management, the owner, can see an incident one way, and it's that way. And someone else in the back who maybe wasn't involved, they see it completely differently. And then whoever's involved, I think if everyone involved in that kind of is aware of the mechanics of those things, they can better reach or probably maintain their relationships, rather than it immediately be starting to become us versus them. Or just, I think, you know, in management terms, they'd say silos would go up. I'm not sure what the therapy walls, I don't know, what would immediately go up. And I don't know, I'm not saying the walls is the right term. I don't know. That I just feel like this does translate, that understanding our biases, and specifically in this case, cognitive distortions, is really important, be it amongst colleagues or clients at the front counter. Like, this translates directly.
Well, they're universal concepts. And so it doesn't matter if we're talking about business or personal or politics or whatever, cognitive distortions show up everywhere. How we talk to one another, the boundaries we use, our relational skills, we don't actually get to compartmentalize those into only one area of life. And truthfully, right, if you have really great relational skills at work and then you drop all those the minute you walk in the door at home, we would actually call that a problem. Like, if you're not generalizing those things, like, that's an issue. I heard this in a training and it always stuck with me. You do what you practice. And so if what you practice in your online consumption is really intense emotional reactions and responding to people impulsively and engaging in contempt, odds are you're going to do that in other places too. Like, we don't actually get to separate that from everything else. It's going to slip into our thinking. It's going to slip into how we think about our coworkers. It's going to slip into how then we talk to our coworkers. And so it does, because you do what you practice. So if that's what you're practicing, you're going to start doing it other places.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And there's an interesting thing. So sometimes we talk about grandiosity. And grandiosity is this, I'm better than you, I know better than you, you're bad, I'm good type mentality. And it drives contempt and a lot of really problematic kind of communication styles and interactions. And the problem with grandiosity is it feels good. It feels good to feel better than, or be grandiose, or believe that you have the answers. And so it's a hard sell sometimes to be like, hey, I get that this feels good, and it isn't good. And I mean, like, it isn't good in that it's not helping you. People don't like you more because you're grandiose. They don't feel safe with you. They don't enjoy you. And actually, it involves a ton of distorted thinking. So you might feel really good doing it, but long term, that isn't going to serve you super well.
Yeah. Or depending on the specifics of it, within certain groups, it might vault you in high regard while alienating and or forcing the opposite end, where now you're immediately opposed and against somebody else, and it just divides.
Well, correct. And you're spot on, right? There are certain systems where if grandiosity becomes the aspired to trait, people can be really successful with it. The interesting piece about that to me, I think it comes to an integrity question. Most people, if you ask them what they believe, what their values are as a person, I mean, you'll get a few people who will answer differently, but like your average person, if you ask them what they believe, there's usually some version of treat each other well, work hard, take care of your business, like, you know, that old shtick. Is grandiosity in line with that? Like, if you're running around making other people feel small, never reflecting, never being like, ooh, I don't actually like how I did that. Like, are you in line with your own values there?
Yeah, I don't think it can last long term, because it could be grandiosity and like with certain positions. But what seems to happen over time is that starts to get narrower and narrower and narrower until you start hemorrhaging people, right? That you've now become so extreme in that. That's what I see.
Oh, totally true, right? And there is this very human thing there. And I think we're seeing it play out, and you can see it right in business too, of one of the hardest things to do is maintain a moderate position in response to something extreme. And I don't even mean that politically. I mean, if I go to someone and I say, hey, when you said XYZ, like, I didn't appreciate that. That felt really disrespectful to me. If what they come back to me is to call me a bunch of names, it'll be really hard to just stand on what I just said, right? The instinct, the automatic instinct is going to be to get extreme back and to fire back.
Yep. Even though you led with really a feeling.
Something very reasonable, yeah.
Right. And we're not taught to validate that.
Or to even take it seriously.
And I don't even mean like a close friend or, of course, significant other. Like, that's where we really learn about this stuff, is to validate feelings and then lead with curiosity. But carrying it over outside of that doesn't seem to occur to anybody. And yet it fits perfectly well. It doesn't have to be like this tender thing. It could be the way that both of you arrive at some common ground and then push each other one way or the other in a good way, like expand your perspective. And they're immediately get defensive. Like, even though you lead in, even with kid gloves on, defensive, like you said, name calling or gaslighting, of course, that you're the one that's messed up. Like, how do you interpret that? It's coming down on you very hard and not like, you're not saying you did this with this intent. What you said affected me this way. Don't get me wrong. I'm sitting here spouting this crap off like I know what the hell I'm talking about. And okay, I've read a lot about this and I listened to a lot of Margaret's ramblings. No, a lot of her a lot of this stuff. And I try to practice it really, really hard. And I got a long ways to go.
Don't we all?
But I'm way better than I was yesterday and exponentially better than I was months and months ago. But I know I recorded an episode about it. Just at the front counter, taking, if you've ever been in relationship, marriage, counseling, it translates. And in the episode we did together, it translates.
It's an interesting space. So I keep thinking about, we can't actually get rid of other people. Whether it's in business, whether it's at home, whether it's out in the world, like other people exist. We're exposed to them. We're going to interact with them. And it's such a like, when we're confronted with somebody else's differences. And sometimes that's a difference of opinion, but sometimes it's what looks like a limitation. How do you not see this? How do you believe this? How do you think it's okay to behave in this way with, you know, I think this is the classic like manager employee, like how do they not know how to do this? Well, they don't. Or with a customer, right? Like, why do they just think I'm always taking advantage of them? That's not what's happening. Like, what is, you know? And it's an interesting space to try and practice a little patience with other people's inherent human flaws. So how do I not personalize this? Because if I personalize it, I'm more likely to feel attacked and offended and upset and be reactive. So how do I be like, okay, well, they're allowed to think that. They're allowed to say that. They're allowed to be in that place. Like, they're allowed to be there. And still have some expectations for, and I'm allowed to be somewhere else. I don't have to agree. I don't have to just tolerate disrespect, but I'm also not going to behave disrespectfully. Maybe they need a little time. There have been times where I've needed time to sort things out, like, you know, simmer down a little bit.
Yeah, oddly enough, that helps. Don't tell the other person they need to. That doesn't work so good. That's, yeah, you know, it's like, the valve was right-hand thread, but then you say that and it becomes left-hand thread and it just cranks it up.
You know, you have to like try as we might. We can't actually force people to be different. And people do actually have to like work their process in life.
My process is improvisation.
And sometimes we get to let people sit in the consequences of their process.
I sit in a lot of consequences. You'd think I'd learn.
Life will keep giving you those opportunities.
But I have this grandiose
belief that it's everyone else's fault.
If they just cut me a little slack, I mean, come on.
If only. Or they could pick up the slack.
Yeah. It's a great idea. That's the best.
True. That'd be great. As offload my responsibilities to everyone else.
Sublet. Yes.
Sublet. That's a nice way of saying that.
It's a better word.
Yeah. You're not abdicating your role or anything like that.
I'm just, you know, trying to reasonably support my position. Trying. Keyword in capital letters, trying.
Yes. So this is an example of minimization. And a lot of rationalization. It's like when people say, I wasn't lying, I just didn't tell you.
I'm not considering myself an intelligent human being. I really am not. But it's known very intelligent people, their position, they are so intelligent or smart, or they're smart enough to come up with very, very good rationale for their thinking and therefore become more rigid in that thinking. And there's a name for it. And I had it. And it just went, dang it.
I mean, you can always find bigger words to rationalize what you're doing. It doesn't change the underlying process. But yes, that is a phenomenon.
People, I think, incorrectly attribute it as Dunning-Kruger, and that's not what it is. It's something else where you can come up with, I'm sure it's confirmation bias, but there it's a subsidiary of it, and you can come up with reasons not to, even in the face of evidence, overwhelming evidence, you can still manufacture almost reasonable reasons or supporting evidence to keep your position. You don't have to shift off. And there's a name for it. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Well, even if we don't know the name, I mean, the phenomenon is valid. And it does have to do with rigidity. And for most of us, what we know is that being flexible and adaptive is good for us. I like the term intellectual humility, which is that ability to, no matter how much you know or have learned, maintain curiosity and openness and kind of recognize there's still a lot I don't know. And so what's it going to hurt me to sort of listen to this and be open to kind of analyzing it?
A big motivator for me is just wanting to better understand. Legitimately, like, I want to be able to see things from others' perspectives. I very much so want to understand that. I may end up totally disagreeing, but if I can just be able to kind of understand it and empathize with it, if you will, I feel like that long-term helps me, because maybe you hold whatever thoughts and ideas and positions for like, there's a decent reason. It could still be wrong, but it doesn't make you some evil entity. You're not nefarious because of this. It's because of experience and whatever has reinforced that position. And now just attacking you with condescension and shame is going to galvanize you. It's not going to help you move off of it or open up your perspectives. Like, I don't have to get you to change your mind right then and there, but maybe I can feed a couple of things that start allowing you to move a little bit.
And I think there's such a different energy to, why am I offering something? Like, we can sense or kind of read, if I just believe you're a bad person and wrong, the energy that I come at you with is going to be very different than like, hey, have you thought about this? Or, hey, I'm worried about this. Or, hey, like, food for thought. People hardly ever respond well to sort of being bashed in the head with something. There's an interesting exercise of, have you ever really truly tried to understand another person's perspective and withheld your own, right? Like, hold all of your experiences to the side, and can you just track how someone else got to where they got to? Might make sense, might not be what you would do, but can you even entertain it? Of like, okay, so this is how this works for you. Fair enough. Raising resistance isn't helpful.
Yeah, and usually on the outside looking in, you can watch it happen live. And again, for me, my own distortion, I'm sure, because it's kind of a should thing, and it's unfortunately, it makes me seem judgy, and I don't think I am, but I must, because watching it happen live, and not just the two or few engaged in it, but those standing around watching it, or others involved, but not directly being okay with it or okay with one side of it, that is very disappointing. It's very frustrating to me to watch that and see that. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around it. And like what you're talking about, trying to see perspectives like that. I think, one, I'd like to know how things work. But I also got there in a very, I feel, probably a left field, from a left field reason. I know it's out there. Are you familiar with Dr. Richard Feynman? He's a late physicist. He won a Nobel Peace Prize for physics.
No, I was thinking of someone else.
I don't know if you watched the documentary on the Challenger. He was the one who essentially figured out why the Challenger exploded with the O-rings. And he went in front of the board. And even though they were threatening to ruin him, he went through with it and explained why, what happened. Anyways, unrelated to that, same person. He would challenge himself to try to figure out, like, Einstein came up with special relativity, those equations, that thought, that idea. So he would try to do the same thing. Like, can I arrive at that? And even though he may or may not have agreed with certain things, he wanted to know if he could put himself in your shoes and arrive at that conclusion the same way and kind of look around from that perspective for a while and then back out. And can now, from where I'm at, can I get there using the stuff that I subscribe to? And if I can't, which one is broken? And very much open to the fact that his could be very broken, that being quantum electrodynamics. But learning about that, that was a very big motivating factor for that effort on my part.
Perspective taking, testing our own thought processes. It's so easy to focus on other people and like proving or disproving them. And it's a totally different process to really look at ourselves and push ourselves and to really assess our own role in things, way of thinking about things. Do I have the skill set to even entertain someone else, like in their way of being? And can I separate the two? Can I not feel threatened by the fact that somebody else is different in this way? And there's an interesting differentiation point too of where do you end and I begin? And in some ways that's very, very clear. And in other ways it's less clear. Can we even get a little comfortable being uncomfortable with that, right? Like if you see it one way or you arrive there in one way, can I tolerate sort of entertaining that?
And that, yeah, that's kind of the secret sauce. That's the moral of the episode.
It helps. It also helps us maintain control of ourselves. So if we are confronted with something we find particularly egregious or upsetting or violating, we can speak about that, right? We can talk about that. We can take action based on that and still behave in ways that are aligned with our own integrity.
It's just so many directions to go. If you had one of them caps on me and were just watching, I'd probably just see this explosion of activity, EEG.
It's a lot of options.
It's not even so much what you find egregious. It might be what somebody finds egregious. So like going with like the client perspective is, it could be a warranty concern where you just had my vehicle, you just did this work, and now, you know, this has happened again. It's doing the same thing. And our perspective is it's not doing the same thing. Their perspective is it is. And they find you saying it isn't and they saying it is absolutely agree. Like they're totally, now the emotions are through the roof. There's a lot of fear, right? And being able to, I guess, you know, being on the other end of that and the customer service perspective, being able to pump the brakes. And I don't even know if absorb is the right word. I just didn't want to say reflect or deflect because I think both are fundamentally bad when we're talking about it. And technically, I don't know if absorbing is the right word either, but can you accept that without personalizing it and cutting them some slack with they're scared? They're scared that they've just spent a lot of money with me. And I'm going to take more of their money because I did something to the car, or I'm incompetent, or, you know, every bad news magazine story about evil mechanics is now right there. They're living it. It may not be true.
The trap people fall into is just making the same statements back and forth to each other. This is the same issue. No, it's not. It's this. No, I know this is the exact same thing it was doing before. No, this is a different thing. Here's how it's different. no, I had the car. You know, like you can just state the same thing back and forth to each other for eternity. And so the question becomes, can somebody do something different here? The customer, right, if they have some assertive skills, could say, okay, pause. Explain to me how this is different because I am not getting it and I am not seeing it. So explain it to me. Like, I need you to make this make sense for me. They could totally do that, but maybe they don't have that skill. At which point, right, the person behind the counter can say, okay, tell me what the concern is. Like, tell me why you think this is the same thing, because I'm hearing that for you this is. So tell me about that. Okay, so can I track that? Can I understand it? And even asking, like, so I understand why you think it's the same thing. Are you open to hearing what we found? Like, I want to have this make sense and I want you to feel good about this. But it requires someone to do something different, potentially in the face of someone who's upset in some way, or in the face of our own emotional upset. And it pays to be a little comfortable with conflict there, right? Because technically that's some conflict, but that doesn't mean it's bad.
So everybody needs to grow up with siblings. That's what I'm getting.
I don't know. Did you learn to like fight productively with siblings? Because I didn't.
You know, honestly, no. Not productively.
Yeah, no, me neither.
By the time I was old enough to maybe start learning to fight productively, didn't spend a whole lot of time with them. So it's stuff to do. I'm around the farm. I'm not saying like out and about, but yeah, chores and responsibility stuff. And then you're never around them. So you can't really have many conflicts.
Well, and I think lots of people like never have productive conflict.
It's amazing how little we know. Nobody did it on purpose, but a lot of it were set up. I don't fail, but struggle at least.
Right. Nobody did it on purpose. Of course, right? The vast majority of the time, that's true. Every once in a while, somebody does something on purpose, but usually not. It's a different default setting, though, if we operate from, is there something I'm missing here? Is there something I don't know or get yet? Versus being really locked in and rigid on, nope, this is the way.
Very Mandalorian, but...
Well, if you notice in The Mandalorian, one of them is very rigid.
It's funny you said that because my opening quote was from Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, to be exact. And it was purposely linked to being cognitive distortion because it's very black and white.
Very. That's funny. I mean, there is a thing like once you start recognizing them, you see more and more of them.
You're talking about Sith? No.
Definitely about Sith, yeah.
There's only two.
They're like roaming my neighborhood currently.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have to do this again. I have so many ideas, stuff to talk about with this stuff. Not this specifically, but just psychology, mental health. It's very, very interesting to me and also just falls in line with how things work, why people work the way they work, function the way they function, why one may do this and may do that and vice versa. And I'm not even, you know, trying to talk about diving into just the details of their existence, but just that these mechanisms that, you know, when we say confirmation bias, like that is a monstrous umbrella term. And yet we all fall under it, and just the variations of it and the branches of it, like it's just this system of its own. And I guess I just find it fascinating. I know some of his credibility has been challenged over the years with many things, but still there is something that resonated with me with Dr. Brett Weinstein and his wife, Heather Hing, talking about with their backgrounds in psychology and their backgrounds in evolutionary biology, that you would think they would be able to handle conflict between each other the best way possible. And yet there are times where It's like the stages, and they know they're in whatever stage, and yet they have to follow it. I just find that fascinating.
We don't ever get to be not human.
I'm working on it.
Good luck.
I'm working on a synthetic body and uploading my... Just kidding. Not, won't even know.
I mean, you can try, but AI has its own set of issues.
Don't get me going on AI. God darn it. People use that term so loosely. All they're talking about are large language models. Ugh.
Find me any tech that is free from any of this.
Well, thank you again. This is Margaret Light. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist, also the president, CEO, all those terms, czar of of Equilibrium Therapy Services. So if you are in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and are looking for somebody to help you with your blind spots, like, I find it troubling that most people, when they suggest going to therapy or seeking therapy, that you are broken, you're effed up, you need help. But all of us need help with toolkits we were never given, never shown, and help pointing out our blind spots. And Margaret is one of the very best at it. So yeah, if you're in the Minnesota, Wisconsin area seeking somebody to help with that, give her a call or message, or I don't know, however you want to be contacted. Postcard, skywriting.
Any of the above is fine. Take out an ad. I mean,
desperately seeking therapists.
I mean, I'm pretty responsive, so anything works. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you to our sponsors, and thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network, even Tracy.
Especially Tracy.
You birds of a feather, I'm telling you. No. Thank you again for listening. And if you have ideas or suggestions for the podcast, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me at mattfonslowpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.